Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have got a really good show for you today. In this half hour of the shul, we will be speaking with Rabbi Chaim Shaul Brook, who is the chief rabbi of Montana, probably the only rabbi in Montana, about what's going on with the Jewish community in Montana. Ben, do you know what's going on with the Jewish community in Montana?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's why we're listening to the Jewish Hour, because this is actually very, very important. There are Nazis marching in the street in Montana, and so we're going to be talking to the rabbi about that. We have a wide assortment of various genre of Jewish music. The portion of the week is the portion of Shmos. We're beginning the book of Exodus today, the birth of Moses, the plagues, not the plagues, but the burning bush, all that kind of stuff. We'll talk about some of that. We have a really amazing, poignant story all the way at the end, when we're, it's like 11:58, got to stick all the way there. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Yeah! 72 countries will attend the upcoming Let's try this again. 72 countries will attend the upcoming Paris Peace Conference, which Israeli officials fear will be used to force a solution to the Arab-Israeli conflict. Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas were invited to France for after the conference to learn of its conclusions. Netanyahu says that only direct negotiations with the two parties will be effective and that he will not be going to Paris. The widow of the terrorist of last Sunday's truck attack in Jerusalem that killed four Israeli soldiers will receive a lifetime pension from the Palestinian Authority for $750 as a reward for her husband's martyrdom, quote unquote. Israel revoked the family's citizenship, taking away their welfare benefits. The UN Security Council this week passed a resolution condemning the attack. I'm actually surprised about that last bit. Israel announced it would not be giving $6 million of its annual contributions to the United Nations for 2017 because of the approval of said UN Security Council resolution that condemned Israel's being in Judea, Samaria, and eastern Jerusalem. We reported last week of two bomb scares at Orlando Jewish centers. This week, there were 17 more bomb scares at JCCs along the East Coast. People are investigating if they're connected or copycat occurrences and are taking them quite seriously. And finally, the German court in the city of Wurtepel ruled that a violent attempt to burn a city synagogue down in 2014 was a justified expression of criticism of Israelis' policy in Gaza. The attack took place on the anniversary of Kristallnacht. The European Jewish Congress condemned the ruling, saying that the ruling was also anti-Semitic. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. 358-9000 or visit them on the web at spexhoward.edu. Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Feynman here. You are a listener to the Jewish Hour. We have online the Shliach, the rabbi from Bozeman, Montana, Rabbi Chaim Brook. We're going to be talking about what's happening in, of all places, Whitefish, Montana, which is now on the map. How are you today, Chaim Shul?
Doing well. Fantastic. A gorgeous day in Bozeman.
I'm glad to hear that. Before we get into the current events, tell us, what's Jewish life like in Montana?
Montana is a state the size of Germany, and obviously very frigid winters. Right now, it warmed up to 14 degrees today, but it's sunny skies, blue sunny skies. But it's a pretty, we've had about a month of minus 10, minus 20. It's been pretty cold. But the Jewish community in Montana is very warm. And we have in the state 9 Jewish congregations, 7 of which are associated with the Reform Movement, 2 of them which are Chabad. And we opened up Chabad in Montana, the first Chabad house in Montana in 2007, continuing a 50-year tradition of Chabad visiting the state during the summer with rabbinical students, finally, you know, opening a permanent center in March of 2007. And then in February of 2014, we opened up a second branch in Missoula with Rabbi and Mrs. Nash, who run the Chabad house in northwest Montana. And so Jewish life is definitely on the up in Montana. It's flourishing. It's growing. We have about 1,500 Jewish today on our mailing list, and that grows every single day. And the Jews are really, although there are some concentrated areas like Bozeman, Missoula, Flathead, where Whitefish is, Helena, but the majority of the Jews in Montana are actually spread out. You know, you have 3 in Glasgow, 4 in Wolf Point, 10 in Sydney, Glendive, and all the way up to Eureka at the Canadian border. So it's spread out. It's far and spread out from each other, but through our publications and through our mailings and through our summer visits, the Jewish people of Montana know that they have a home for Judaism, even though it's located physically in Bozeman and Missoula, but we are there to service them wherever they may be and bring Yiddishkeit to their little towns.
That's fantastic. So how far does the furthest Jew have to travel to get to a Chabad house in Montana? If you're talking miles or hours.
If they were looking to go to a Chabad house, they can drive 7 to 8 hours from the northeast corner of the state until they get to the first Chabad house on the road. You know, so if they were coming from Plentywood, Montana, all the way down to Bozeman, if the weather's permitting, if the highways are open that day, then it could take 7 hours plus. If there's harsh weather, it could take a lot longer. So, you know, it's really not a practical solution for most people, but we make sure to bring Judaism to them, you know, a la carte, instead of them having to schlep and try to make it once every 5 years to Bozeman or Missoula.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That, just put that in perspective, that's like driving from Detroit to Milwaukee, that distance. That's, yeah.
I used to drive to Whitefish to give, before we had Chabad in Missoula, which is closer to the Flathead, I used to drive, you know, once every 2 months, once every 3 months to Whitefish to give a class to the Jewish community there. And I would drive, I'd leave the house, you know, 6, 7 in the morning. It's a 6-hour drive. I'd go give the class and then I'd drive home. So someone once said to me, you know, Chaim, it sounds like if someone in New York said, I'm driving to Montreal to give a shir, to give a class. And I said, that's exactly what it's like, except here there's no tunnels, there's no tolls, there's no bridges, there's no traffic,
there's no
police officers, there's nothing. All you got to do is just drive.
There's no speed limit. Yes. Okay. Indeed.
No, there is a speed limit. In the last 20 years, there's a speed limit, but the speed limit on the 90, on the Highway 90 is 80. So you can, you know, drive safely at 80 without any issues.
Okay, indeed. Okay, so now, Whitefish, Montana. I'm wondering, are there whitefish in White? We have a Whitefish, Michigan, and it's where all the Lake Superior whitefish come into port. Are there whitefish in Whitefish?
I don't know the answer to the question. Montana has amazing fishing experiences. Whitefish Lake, my guess is, has some whitefish, which is why the town got the name, but that's just a guess. It's not the larger of the lakes in the Flathead area. The Flathead area is one of the most magnificent areas in Montana, but probably in the country. And it's primarily known for Flathead Lake, which is a very, very large body of water that is truly pristine and picturesque, surrounded by mountains. But Whitefish Lake is smaller, and it's in the town of Whitefish, and you know, a lot of high-end homes on the lake that people submit, have second homes from other places. It's a really beautiful, quiet ski town in the winter, and you know, western entrance to Yellowstone, to Glacier National Park in the summer. So it's a really beautiful place. I've been there so many times. I've taken my kids and my wife. It's just a beautiful place. And it's really unfortunate that it's getting a bad rap right now, but my guess is pretty soon this will blow over, and Whitefish will go back to being this beautiful, beautiful place.
Mm-hmm. So Whitefish, you would say, like the people who are like the stockbrokers who are fed up with the rat race of living in Manhattan and having to pay zillions of dollars for Manhattan rent for the same price, can get a grand estate in Whitefish and do the whatever they're doing over the computer wherever they are. That's generally the population of Whitefish?
The population of Whitefish is 3,000 or 4,000, I believe. But in general, Montana has become, over the last 15, 20 years, a haven for people that are sick of city life. They want to have, you know, less traffic, less pollution, less noise in their life, and they want to live a more, peaceful life, a more tranquil life. And like you said, you know, with computers today, a lot of high-tech companies are moving to Bozeman. They don't have to be in Silicon Valley anymore. They can be right here, whether it's in Bozeman or in Whitefish or Kalispell or Missoula. So it is opening up a little bit to people from the urban area that want to live a more suburban-type life, but really suburban, not suburban where you have to schlep in a tunnel to get to work, but permanently suburban lifestyle, rural lifestyle. And, you know, with that, you know, it does come with a challenging winter. No one should ever be fooled. It's a gorgeous winter, but it's, you know, schlepping your kids to school every day in minus 10 degrees at 8 o'clock in the morning is not what most people look forward to. But, when you look at the pluses and minuses of a place like Montana, the pluses by far outnumber the negatives.
Okay. So now, generally across the state of Montana, we're talking officially, I'm sure you've had stuff to do with the state government. Does it describe the tolerance for diversity in Montana? I imagine it's being somewhat a liberal state, and there being a lot of tolerance, and people like to do things together. Would that be a quick, correct assumption, Rabbi Brook?
Politically, Montana is very confusing. We've elected many Democrat governors. We've elected a Democrat senator. But for the most part, for president, we've elected Republicans for many, many years. That being said, the cities like Bozeman and Missoula, which are university towns, are definitely more progressive than the rest of the state. And the governor and the senators and the attorney general and the congressmen across all party lines together came out in unison to condemn the negative behavior of a few dark elements in the Flathead area and Whitefish that were trying to speak negatively and act negatively against local Jewish businesses and Jewish families. So, I mean, Montanans are the sweetest people you'll meet. They're mostly ideologically libertarian, which means they don't want to butt into your life. They don't want you butting into their life. They want to be good neighbors. And as long as you don't come onto their property illegally, you'll be okay. They're obviously strong believers in the Second Amendment. They protect their families. I mean, the average Montanan has way more than one weapon. And it's really unfortunate that a place that is so tolerant, and so not only tolerant, but friendly. Tolerance to me is a negative thing. It means I really don't like you, but I have to tolerate you, or I choose to tolerate you. It's really about love, and it's really about acceptance, and it's really about being friendly, good people, and they really are. And so when they talk about a white supremacist march in Montana, just bear in mind, people need to know that few of these people are actually from Montana. They're actually just busing them in from other places, because to find an anti-Semite in Montana is not easy. You got to go out of state to import them to make your message.
Okay. So now, given that introduction now, so let's bring us up to snuff. There is someone who, by me looking at, I get my information from the Jewish Telegraph Association, so there must be I'm sure there's a slant there. There is an individual, we don't need to bother naming him, we don't have to give him that credulity, who is fomenting anti-Semitism, who tomorrow, the show's for Sunday, wants to, on Martin Luther King Day, which is like National Appreciate Other People Day, wants to have a white supremacist rally. My mother would ask the question, what bug got up his nose? What's the problem here?
Well, there's an individual who shall remain unnamed, who is a active white supremacist, who believes in white supremacy and thinks Mein Kampf is a very important document, whose parents live in Whitefish, Montana.
He himself he himself doesn't live in Whitefish.
He doesn't live there permanently. You know, it's his mailing address, I believe, but I don't think he's there very often. But his parents do, and there was some kind of interaction between his mother and a member of the Jewish community, and it resulted in one of these white supremacist websites, these neo-Nazi websites that are, you know, trying to promote an anti-Jewish operation in Whitefish. And it's really unfortunate because, again, the people of Whitefish, and I'm talking about primarily the Gentiles, the non-Jews in Whitefish, they're wonderful people. I love hanging out with them. They're just nice, good people. But they're going to, you know, they figured it's an opportunity to try to, with a good dose of propaganda, create this image as if the Jews, the three Jewish families in Whitefish that were involved in this, are somehow trying to extort his mother out of her property and force her to sell. And it's really all propaganda. But, you know, propaganda sells, and the media didn't help matters by constantly reporting on it and making it into a story. And so now we have a story, and they're threatening to come and march on Martin Luther King Day on Monday, January 16th. I do not believe that at the end it will actually come to fruition. I don't believe they got the right permit.
No, the city announced that they would not issue a permit because the paperwork wasn't complete, but they're free to file the paperwork and march
again
some other time.
Yeah, Mike, and like I said, you know, I'm not a prophet, and no one here in the Jewish community is gifted with prophecy as far as I know, and so I can't predict what the future will be, but my guess is that this will blow over, and when they realize how much love there is, when they realize how much love is combating their darkness, they will move on and find somewhere that's more receptive to their ideas to promote this negative ideology.
It kind of reminds me, you sound like a very young person. I'm not going to ask you your age, but there was a story that happened.
I'm happy. I'm 35. I'm not hiding.
Okay. There was a story that happened in Skokie, Illinois, probably before you were born. I don't remember exact year that the Skokie
myself. It was in the 70s, and yes, it was before I was born.
Yes. So the Skokie thing, there's a difference between Skokie and Whitefish in that one of the central Jewish communities in Illinois that has probably close to 100,000 Jews is Skokie. And here there was this group that went to the Supreme Court, and they have the freedom of speech, and if they want to wear Nazi uniforms and do goose-stepping, they can. And they finally got permission after like a year of whatever you call it, and there were probably 15 protesters to the march for every marcher. And it just went away, and it was really pitiful on their part, and it made those people who wanted to organize this march look really stupid. So I'm sipping.
That's the hope here.
Okay. So is there any kind of organized anti-march scheduled for whenever there's a march, Rabbi Shelbrook?
There isn't. The community up in Whitefish, led by, they have a congregation called the Glacier Jewish Community. They have a rabbi named Francine Rostin. And they, together with all the members of the Jewish community up there, don't think it would be beneficial at all to counter-protest these people. You know, in today's day, with FBI and law enforcement heavily involved in Whitefish and monitoring everything that's going on in the chat rooms to make sure that the Jewish community and in general minorities are safe, they don't believe counter-protesting will be productive. They actually believe that it would be counterproductive because it would give them the attention that they're desperate for and give them the
platform,
you know, inspiration to try it again. You know, and when, you know, if you ignore them, ignore them, not ignore them from a law enforcement perspective, but ignore them from a local standing up perspective to them, it will go away. And that's our hope.
Yeah, there's this.
But we are doing our part at Chabad. We just, you know, in Chabad, we don't just, law enforcement has to get rid of darkness legally with the powers entrusted to them. But at Chabad, we launched a project to counter the darkness with light, and we're going to deliver a chumash, a beautiful Torah, 5 books of Moses, to every Jewish family in the state of Montana. We have a project now going on to raise the funds for that. For those that are interested, they can go to www.jewishmontana.com/chumashproject, chumashproject.com. And it's only $40 to sponsor a chumash. And if someone in Michigan or anyone wants to actually help support light over darkness in the state of Montana during this time, this is a very practical solution and way for them to be part of the the solution and not part of the problem.
Oh, that's awesome. So it's like the standard line of turning darkness into light, taking an opportunity of turning a negative into a positive. How is it?
Exactly.
I'm sure you've announced that project to your membership in Montana, Rabbi Brook.
We announced it, but I don't want them to sponsor the book because they're the ones that are going to be the recipients. We announced it through the media and through social media and various other forms, age.com and Chabad.org, and various successful Jewish organizations have sent out the link to this project to their mailing list. And what that is doing is that we're getting support from people around the country. Truly, it's truly amazing and remarkable to watch Jews and non-Jews from around the country who care about what's going on here respond so lovingly by sponsoring sometimes one, sometimes 18 books that we can give to 18 families or one family in Montana and bring that love for Judaism, enhance Jewish life. If they think they're going to diminish Jewish life, they are so wrong, because we will not only stay quiet, and stay stagnant and stay at the same level, we will actually grow Judaism thanks to them. So the darkness should be thanked for creating more light, and we're very grateful to a couple of Nudnik neo-Nazis for giving us the inspiration to enhance Jewish life in the great big skies of Montana.
That is so awesome. This is very inspiring, Rabbi Brook. Okay, so again, if people would like to participate in this project, what's the website they should go to?
JewishMontana.com/Chumash Project, CHUMASH Project.com.
Okay. Are you giving people a time limit? You want it done by, like, to say have it all of them collected by tomorrow would be good. Then you could have the project done and everybody could have the chumash.
By today or tomorrow. Today it'll be good. But the sooner we can get it to the families, the better. And we're not going to wait till we have all 1,500. Right now we have about 250 of them sponsored, and in the next couple of weeks, we're going to get those out, starting with the families in Whitefish and Kalispell up in the Flathead Valley, and then make our way throughout the state, city by city, making sure every Jewish family, every Jewish soul in the state of Montana feels supported, loved, and has the inspiration to fight on for another beautiful day.
Mm-hmm. Now, my next question is, this is a little bit off the cuff, but how many of those 1,500 people you say would appreciate getting such a book in the mail?
I believe from my experience with previous campaigns, whether it was a kosher campaign, a mezuzah campaign, that at least 95% of the Jews in Montana will be receptive. You know, you always have in the Jewish community some people that look to find the negative, but that's humanity. You can't change all humans simultaneously. But the vast majority of Montanans have a super positive perspective on Chabad's activities in the state. And when they are reached out to, they are very receptive and welcoming to any additional Jewish experience that they can be part of.
Okay, that's wonderful. We wish you continued success in your quest of light over darkness, and we should receive the ultimate light with the coming of the Mashiach, the Messiah, the Messianic era, and we'll see Montana will be transported to Jerusalem, and should all be good things. So thank you so much for coming, and wish you continued success, Rabbi Shulbrook. Chaim Shulbrook. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hey, Schultzman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. That is really very impressive, the way of taking a potentially very negative occurrence, which really probably has the ramifications of very little. We're talking about the middle of no place with nobody, you know, so as far as that. But it is making the news and turning that and turning it into a major project of revolutionary purports that there should be a Bible, a Jewish Bible in everybody's house. So, yeah, if you got it, Go give them the 20, 40 bucks. You know, 20 bucks is half a chumash. They'll take that. If they want 1,500, if 3,000 people gave 20, it'd also work. We have now up for your listening pleasure. This is Nissan. We played him last week. He is an up-and-coming rising star on the Jewish music scene. He is an African-American convert who moved to Israel, still does rap. He was a rapper before he converted to Judaism. He's still a rapper, but now, as he says, he's rapping for God. Together with God Albaz, who's not a rising star, he's there already. The song's called L'Chaim, to life.
Can't you see the world is turning to ashes, 'cause fire is burning? Bad news that make you feel like you can't be happy.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. I want to play some more music for you. This is Dan Hoffman. He's a klezmer virtuoso. This is very melodious and haunting. The song is called Der Dybbuk. A dybbuk is, what do we call a dybbuk in English? That soul that possesses somebody else is called a dybbuk in English, in Yiddish. So it's about the soul that is wandering and lost and can't get into heaven. Let's listen in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey, Schulfeldman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We got time for one more. This is a Mizerlu. Mizerlu is a traditional dance. It's been adopted by Jews. It's originally Greek, of course. And this is Gabriel Cohen.
I go to a hospital to get healthy. At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248
624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week, we began the book of Exodus. This is still really heavy, deep into the Bible story stuff. Starts with the names. The book is called, the parsha is called Shmos. The name of the book in Hebrew is called Shmos. In English, it was changed from the literal translation, which would be names, to the book of Exodus, because it talks about the Jews leaving Egypt. I mean, even from next week already, they're like, they're not even doing any more bricks anymore at that point. By next week, it's like the second week of the book. But in Hebrew, it's called the book of names, simply because the book starts with, and as does the portion this week, these are the names of the 12 children of Jacob who left Egypt. And then it proceeds to list them from Reuben all the way down to Benjamin. The book of Numbers, which in Hebrew is called Bamidbar, has, Bamidbar means in the desert, because it describes the Jews, what was happening for them in the 40 years in the desert. But it does have this nickname, Sefer Pikudim, which means the Book of Numbers, which is what they decide to call it in English because there are so many senses in the book. Jews are getting counted all over the place. Yet, in this book, the Book of Exodus, there's no nickname to it that refers to, say, in Hebrew as Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, which would be a translation of the Book of Exodus of Egypt. It's always and only called the Book of Shmos, the Book of Names. So one of the simple answers given as to what was so important about starting the book, because it could have started the book anyway. I mean, we say we call it the book. We call it the book because of the first word of the name of the portion. The first word of the book, generally, is how the book is called. But the Almighty could have dictated it to Moses any possible way and would have called it something else, and we'd be sitting talking, well, why is it called this way? So it says that the Jewish people, while they were in Egypt, never assimilated into Egyptian culture. Now, this is a big plus to the Jews of that time. And they say specifically that they maintained their style of dress. They maintained their own language, and they didn't change their names. The first thing Joseph happened to Joseph, okay? Joseph's sitting in a dungeon for 13 years. He gets pulled off, pulled out, stands in front of Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, you're taking over, and first thing we're going to do is we're going to change your name from Joseph to Tzafnas Paneach, which is Egyptian for the interpreter of secrets. Okay, very good. You know, so Joseph needed, I guess, a nom de guerre because he was like, people couldn't relate to it. They'd say, like, you know, Joseph? What kind of name is Joseph? Oh, Tzafnas, Tzafnas Paneach. Of course, I know that name. That's an Egyptian word. Joseph? What? The Jews in Egypt maintained their identity. They knew who they were. They did not try to blend in to Egyptian culture and thereby avoid having to make bricks, for example. What do you want? I'm a good Egyptian. No, they didn't. They stood up for their values. Okay, come now, America, 1920s, 30s, a little before, a little after. Okay, Jews are coming over to this country, and they all have their means and style of dressing. And you could tell a European Jew, you look at the pictures of people that were taken 100 years ago. You say, oh, that guy's from Europe. Oh, look the way he's dressed. So that went right out, first of all. People with long beards suddenly became clean-shaven. People who kept Shabbos, kept the Sabbath their whole lives, suddenly are working 7 days a week because I have to feed my family. It's a mitzvah for me to feed my family, right? People are teaching their kids English so that they forget about Yiddish. So we've had a couple shows about the Renaissance of Yiddish and how
it's making such a comeback when it really isn't. You know, so there's still a vast majority of people who, if I say a Yiddish word, haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. So it's not making that comeback. It's okay. It's kind of hanging in there a little bit. And names? Okay, so there's a Jewish joke that was formulated, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. Okay, the year is 2050. And there's two fathers are sitting in the playground watching their kids. Okay, and they're both on the swings. And he says, hey, you got a nice kid. What's your kid's name? He says his name is Shlomo. He says, Shlomo? Where's he going to name Shlomo? And he says, he's named after his grandfather, Scott. So this is sort of like a joke which switches the tables around, because we all had grandfathers. Beryl became Barry, and Moshe became Maurice, or something else like that. You know, Chana became Anne. Tzivia became Sylvia. You know, Bluma became Blanche. All of these things. If it just sounded like it, it sounds close enough. We're gonna anglicize those names. An attempt that people shouldn't know that this person whose name had been something like Moshe Chutzaretskifetchk is now calling himself Murray Green. Okay, they're not going to know he's Jewish. Everybody knows he's Jewish. Okay, those people in Whitefish, Whitefish, Montana. Okay, I am sure, I would put money on it, that they don't dress like their great-grandparents did. And I would probably say that 99% of them know not more than just a few Yiddish words, like, say, tushy. That's, like, become popular. And a couple of swear words that everybody knows, which I'm not going to say on the air. And their names? They're probably, you know, you have Rabbi Florence over there. I mean, you know, so the person who calls herself a rabbi is calling herself Florence. She's not even using her Hebrew name. I'm sure, being that she's called, quote unquote, the rabbi, she must have a Hebrew name. Yet, such a place like that is a hot spot for anti-Semitism. And there's, in the whole area, there's only 100 Jews, maybe. What Jews fail to recognize now is that what we live in is not a melting pot. I remember way back when, in fifth grade, I was 10 years old, and I had a very insightful teacher. I give him a lot of credit for getting me onto the way into academics. He said, America is not a melting pot where everything just sort of like boils up together and becomes one homogeneous mass and everything's together. He said, nah, it's more like a salad bowl. Where it's true, if you're eating a salad, so what do you have today for lunch? You say, you had a salad. You don't say, well, I had lettuce and cucumbers and peppers and onions and mushrooms and avocado and some dressing, which was made up of oil and vinegar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You say, I had a salad for lunch today. But the salad, being one entity, is comprised of its individual parts. And so, yes, America is not a melting pot. People don't really lose their identity. My kids are fourth generation American. I have a nephew who moved recently to Michigan. He was born and raised in New York. He's not religious. He's got hair down to his shoulders. His name is not a Jewish name. He wears standard clothes that a 24-year-old person, single person individual, casually normally wears. And he said, posted on Facebook a couple weeks ago that he was walking out of a place and somebody yelled, "Dirty Jew," to him. And his first question was, how did he even know? He's not wearing a high, a Star of David, any kind. He doesn't have the flag of Israel on his jacket on the back or any place. It's because America is this salad bowl. And what we as Jews need to do, it says, Maisa avoy simen labonim. what our patriarchs did indicates what we should be doing. They were trailblazers. They were there already. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Somebody did all the hard work for us. We just have to fit in the component pieces and run with it. They saw that it would be most advantageous to the Jewish people, and it really, really was, to get, because their purpose in going into Egypt was to get out of Egypt. And they were told they're going to be in Egypt for 400 years. Yet, because they were who they were, the Almighty lopped off 190 years. They were only in Egypt for 210 years. They came out, they got the Torah, they had their redemption. We are in this exile not to be in the exile. We are here to usher in the Messianic era. That's what we're here for. We need to really stand up and, as Rabbi Brooks said before, take all the negative, take all the darkness, and change it into light. Take whatever comes to us and turn it into some positive way to serving the Almighty, making the world a lighter place, and then ushering in our final redemption with the coming of the Messiah. We have to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Don't go away. We got the Hasidic story coming up. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com. That's www.rabbifinman.com. You'll find archive editions of the show. You'll find ways to contact me. You'll find the e-parsha, the u-parsha, the Hasidic u-story. Means by which yours truly conveys the ideals, principles, philosophy, and the fun of being Jewish, hopefully, in a very easy to understand way. You'll also find the very important donations page. This month, we paid off November. We're looking to pay off, what's today? Today is the 17th, I think. Yeah, I'm not even looking at the calendar. I haven't looked at the calendar. It's almost 12 o'clock in the morning. I haven't looked at the calendar today. I don't know what day of time it is, what day it is. But anyway, today is the 15th, and we are we're getting there for December. So just keep those cards and letters coming, folks. We cannot stay on the air without you. So go to your computer, go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page. They have numbers already pre-programmed in. You just click. If you have a PayPal account, you enter your PayPal password. It takes it out of your account. You're done in 30 seconds. If you don't have a PayPal account, it takes 2.5 minutes more to add in your credit card number. And you can make it such that you could do it so that it works monthly. So if you could do $5 or $10 or $25 a month, that for us is totally awesome, because a $10 donation a month is $120 a year. That's really fantastic. So just go do it. If you don't want to handle it, we have a new address. It's the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Now, that address is the address of Jewish Ferndale, which is part of the same umbrella organization as the Jewish Hour. Jewish Ferndale's participant in this year's Ferndale Blues Festival. We've got two coffee houses coming up, two places where you can come in. It's a relaxed atmosphere. We have some acoustic music playing. It's blues, so because it's the Blues Festival. You can grab a cup of coffee, some light snacks. There's a $10 cover charge. January 28th at 8 o'clock, which is a Saturday night. And February 2nd, which is Thursday night, we have different groups playing each night. If you play an instrument and you play it well, you can come up and play a song or two. That's fine. We're free and easy. We're groovy on that. So that's 1725 Pinecrest. Parking is across the street at the Renaissance Vineyard. And we hope to see you there. We're going to have a great time. It is alcohol-free, which is why we're doing it, because the rest of the festival happens to be in a bar, in bars around. So we're doing it alcohol-free for those people who don't want to go to a bar. You know, there's a certain elements in bars. There's certain ambience in bars. This is laid back and mellow. That's basically what Jewish Ferndale is all about. We want it to be a place where you can come and feel relaxed and feel good about Judaism. We've got a quick Hasidic story for you. There was a certain Rebbe whose name was Menachem Mendel Haradukar. Haradok is a city, not Viaduct, Haradukya. Yeah. It's located in the Vitebsk section of, I think that's White Russia, which is located many, many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. And this Rebbe in his later years decided, based, very interestingly, on a story that the Baal Shem Tov told him when he was 10 years old. When he was 10 years old, he went to visit the Baal Shem Tov. And the Baal Shem Tov basically told him the story of his life from the day of his birth to the day of his death. So he knew that at some point he was going to have to move to Israel. So he picked himself up and he moved to Israel. On his way to Israel, he stopped off in the city of Polnoya to meet a senior contemporary, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef of Polnoya. When he went to go see him, Yaakov Yosef Polnoya was very meticulous about proper conduct. So here he was. He was this. They didn't know who he was. He's some guy who shows up to town and says, I want to go see your rabbi. And he's got his pipe in his mouth and he has his jacket open. He probably has a bit of a belly. And they were shocked that the rabbi put up with such arrogance. And they went and they challenged him. They challenged, after he left, they went to the rabbi and said, Rebbe, this person, he's such an arrogant person. He said, let me tell you about Menachem Mendel Haradukar. He is the humblest person alive. But he doesn't want to know anybody, that anybody should know that he's really humble. So where does he hide his humility? He hides his humility where no one will ever think to look for it. He hides it in arrogance. You commented, look, the guy wears gold shoelaces. But you didn't happen to notice that he has no soles on his shoes. He's walking barefoot. That's going to do it for us today. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care. מישהו להגות שמו בשפתיים, לב להניח עליו ידיים. כל אדם צריך מישהו להתפלל עבור.